that so we need to understand that this is an approach. Oh, here's you. Okay, here we go. So this is the Morales answer is an approach. It's not the only approach, because you could just look at the simple reading. If you read the story, is Avram asked the question, I don't understand. I need, give me more than just that you're promising me. I want to have some, a little bit more of a when it comes to this situation of you promising my kids that they're going to inherit this land, I need a little bit more to work with. To that, God says, take these animals out, da 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 da. And what they're really doing is is making a treaty. In the old days, the treaty was made where you would split things in half. You would like cut it in the middle. Now, why these animals? Okay, whatever. There's some symbolism behind it, different sacrifices, but nothing more than that. You can read it simple. They're just making a treaty. Okay, this is a way that they would make treaties. So that's one approach. What we were saying last week is that the Maral was actually saying, like, no, it is about carbonate, but don't get stuck on the carbonate per se. Even though this is one option, is that he's saying that the nature of the Jewish people is such that the fact that a sacrifice can work has utility to be able to rectify a sin or a misdeed indicates their spiritual level. The fact that you can do something that seems to be, like not hocus pocus, but you're doing some kind of the process that can actually somehow rectify the sin in such an easy way, so to speak, it must indicate the fact that they're on a certain spiritual plane. And that's basically what he's saying. So yes, the carbonate is a function. Now that's something that Eric wanted to say. Can we go into that subject matter, which I reserve? What's going to end up happening is like this. We're going to get there. What we need to look at is this week we're going to go into this Gemara with Avram, and then we're going to have Hanukkah coming. So the next couple of weeks is going to be about Hanukkah. And so and apropos to Thanksgiving as well, because Hanukkah is about Hodah and being thankful. But there's also a lot more, so I'm going to look at Hanukkah, and then on the back end after Hanukkah, we can come back to Karbonot, which I want to get into. Like we'll talk about the detail, but the point of the takeaway, the Maral is saying that the Karbonot is a side thing that tells you that's an indicator of the fact that we as a people have a spiritual constitution or construct that is on a very high plane that. Basically, what it really is saying is when we sin, it only is a superficial level to who we are. And that what we're about is we're an extremely elevated spiritual group that therefore Carbono can actually work. That's basically that's how he reads it. Meaning, God, here's Avram, he's saying, I have no problem. I accept the fact that you're telling me I'm going to have kids. I get it. I'm good with that. I believe it. Good. Oh, wait a second. My kids are going to have rights to this land of Israel. They're going to inherit it. Give me more. I need more. Carbonate. Carbonate. What do you mean carbonate? So what I'm saying is carbonate is indicating the fact that they're on a very high spiritual plane, which is connected to this whole idea of the land of Israel. Meaning the land of Israel, why it's such a hotbed and why it's so such a focus of the entire world is that there's something very special about this specific piece of land. There's something that is built into this place that people seek it because there's a spiritual element to it that you find that's unique to the place that you're not going to find in other places of the world. You might have, like, let's say, for example, they talk about, like, you go to Sedona in Arizona, Anybody been there to Sedona? Okay, so they say like Sedona's got this, like you go there and it's just there's something very spiritual about Sedona. Okay, so there are places in the world you go to, like certain beautiful places, and you're gonna have a spiritual experience. But when you go to Israel, it's like it's on steroids, right? There's something built into this place that Avram already has been to the land, by the way. In that story, when he's talking to God, he's been to Israel, so he recognizes there's something about this place that has an energy that is very spiritual. Okay, so now, so think about this. So if you put it in that context, he's saying to God, "Tell me why are my kids gonna deserve to get this place? Karbanos, because their spiritual construct is fitting for this place. That's the way the Maral would read. Okay, so that's the answer. Okay, so now bringing us to this. So in the context of Brachot, we were up to we were kind of like in six, the area of six. I jumped ahead to 7b, okay, because it really fits in with the parsha that we were reading about Avram. So it says like this: until now, the Gemara cited statements made by Rav Yochanan in the name of the Tana, Rav Yossi. Now the Gemara begins to cite where Rav Yochanan, who lived in the time of the Gemara, had said the name of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, Ben Yochai, who was the time of the Mishnah. And what was the teaching? From the day that the Holy One, blessed be He, created the world, there was no person who called Him Lord, Adonai, until Abraham came and called Him Lord. As it is stated, and he said, "My Lord God, by what shall I know that I will inherit it?" Right? This is exactly what we're just talking about, right? This is the question when he says, right? In that sentence, when he asks the question, he actually calls God Adonai, right? Vayomer Adonai Elohim v'ma'idak yirashena. It's the first time that God is referred to as my master. Okay? Pretty wild. So in the context of that question, where he's questioning God, how do I know that my kids are deserving of inheriting this land? And the answer is, well, wait a second. We just noticed something where Rav Shimon Yochai is saying this is the first time in history that it's actually marked and stated that someone refers to God as master. Okay? So the question we have to ask ourselves is, what is that? Like, what is the significance of that? Okay? Any suggestions?
What is the question now? Significance of what?
Of the fact that
That's the.
Avraham, that Avraham is calling God for the first time. It's not Elohim, which is God, but rather Adonai, my master. He translated it as Lord. Lord, master. I think it's the same. Like when we daven, we always refer to God as Adonai. Okay? And Adonai means master. Now, kind of what I wanted to talk about today is the different names that we refer to God as, right? So the spelling, let me show you something, okay? Just so you see, like, let's look at this. Hold on a second. I need to wait for this thing to clear. It's not clearing. There we go. Okay. Here, look at this. You see over here? It says that for Avram Zakin Baba Yamim, Abraham was now old, advanced in years. Vadonai, Berach et Avram Bakol. I'm pronouncing it again as Lord Adonai. It's not spelled that way. Right? How is it spelled? It's spelled Yud Hey Vav Hey. What is that name of God? We never pronounce it that way, but it is, well, some will call it Jehovah, right? The answer is
Yes, correct.
that's incorrect. The reason it's incorrect is because it's predicated on the vowelization of the word, okay, of the name. What I mean by that is if you look at the way this is spelled here, Vav, then it has Yud without any vowel, Hey without a vowel, and then under the vav it has an ah. So that vowelization, you can have the same yud hey vav hey word of name of God, vowelizations differently and pronounce it differently. That could be Elohim, could be with an with a segel underneath that, and we pronounce it Elohim. But this word, we're never pronouncing it as it's spelled. Here, let's just look at where would you see God's name spelled with Yud Hey Vav Hey. That's very much something that we're very connected to is here. Look at this.
Shema?
Yeah, exactly. Look at the Shema. Okay, just so you notice this. Okay. Here. Right? It says, look at that. Yud. Now this might be, but you see, Adonai. Even though it's Yud Hey Vav Hey. What does that mean? What is the word, what is the name of Yud Hey Vav Hey? What is that? I mean, I shouldn't even say it. Yud, comma, hey, or Yud, whatever. We don't say that. But what is this word? What's this name of God? This name of God is the idea that God is transcendental. Haya, he was. Hoveh, he is. Yehiyah, he'll be in the future. Okay? We see the name kind of referenced when God's talking to Moses at the bush. He says, Moses says to God, when I come to the Jewish people and I say, you sent me, what name should I use? And he says, I am what I am. Or, yeah, I will be what I will be. Okay? Like, what? Like, what does that mean? Like, so again, it's almost like he's saying, like, I'm the God who is becoming. It's like something that's, it's a constant. The idea of God is Yud Hey Vav Hey, is the idea that God is above time. He's above. He's always. He was. He will be. He is. He's okay. We never pronounce the name. So I saw it. I saw this in a book where they asked the question: why don't we pronounce this name? And the answer is that if you were to pronounce the name of God. We look at it as the essential name of God. If we were to pronounce it as is, we would create limitation. So we never pronounce the name. Because by definition, it cannot be stated because it's something that's not defined. In any, you can't create a limitation to this name that's beyond limitation. Okay? So now, going back to this thing here, though. So now, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, quoted by Rav Yochanan, is saying, from the time that God created the world, there was never anybody that called God Master Adonai, which is how we say, Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. When we pronounce Shema, even though it's spelled this way, we always say it Adonai. We pronounce it as Adonai, master. Okay, so Adonai, our master, is our God. Our master is one, but it's also Yud Hey Vav Hey. Why would we? Clearly, there's two things going on. So in the halacha, when it talks about what are we supposed to be thinking when we say Shema, and when we meditate on God's name here, there are two things we should meditate. We should actually look at the spelling, have in our minds the idea that God is transcendental, that he's Hayahovavia, that he's above time, he's in the past, present, and future. So we're meditating on that aspect of God, and at the same time, we're also saying he's our master, Adonai. So we pronounce it as master. So there's like two things that are going on. There's this aspect of God that's beyond time, that's transcendental, and at the flip side, he's very much our master. So now, I kind of like gave it away a little bit there, but let me show you something interesting here in yesterday's parsha. Okay, so Sarah dies, and Avram is older, and it says that God blessed Avram Bakol. He blessed him with all things. And Abraham said to the senior servant of his household, who had charge of all that he owned, put your hand under my thigh. I want you to swear, and I will make you swear by the Lord. Now, it's interesting here. He's not calling him, it's Badonai, but it's spelled with the transcendental name. Okay, so he's saying, I'm going to make you swear Badonai, but the God of Yudke Vavke, the God of the heaven and the God of the earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but it will go to the land of my birth and get a wife for my son Isaac. And the servant said to him, what if the woman does not consent to follow me to this land? Shall I then take your son back to the land from which you came? Abraham answered him, on no account must you take my son back there, meaning he cannot leave the land of Israel. Listen to what he says here. the Lord, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, again, it's this thing of, we're pronouncing it as Adonai. It's, again, the transcendental. It's the same name that we use in Shema. The God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and my native land, who promised me an oath, saying, I will assign this land to your offspring. He will send his angel before you, and you will get a wife for my son from there. Okay, and then to finish it up, and if the woman does not consent to follow you, you shall then be clear of this oath to me, but do not take my son back there. And so the servant puts his hand on the thigh of his master Abraham and swore to him as bin. Okay, so now tell me. All right, and I want to show you something strange, okay? Look at what Avram does here. He says, I want you to swear, God of heaven and the God of earth. Okay, now listen to what happens, though. He says, the slave says, what if she doesn't want to come back with me? He says to him, listen, the God of heaven who took me from my father's house and from my native land. What's wrong with that?
We have to be the God of earth.
Exactly, right? So check this out. He makes him swear. He says, I'm making you swear on the God of heaven and the God of earth. And then when he talks about God, who took him from his house, from his native land, his father's house and his native land, that was only the God of heaven who took him from my father's house. What's going on here? Isn't that a bit bizarre? A little strange, right? I mean, we're literally in the same conversation, right? It's not like this is a different, you know, time went by and we're talking differently. Within the same conversation, you have Avram, he's referring to God as first the God of heaven and the God of earth. And he's talking about going back, sending back to my homeland. But then when he's challenged, he says, yeah, the God of heaven who took me from my father's house and my native land. So what do you think's going on there?
Well, he's still calling him the God of heaven. Is it, I don't know, a different definition of earth? I mean, he's an earthly thing. His father's house, his native land, that's earthly, no?
I don't know. Anybody, any other suggestions? Okay, so here, how about this? Avram was making an unbelievable observation. He's saying, at the time when I was taken, when God came to me to take me out of Orkasta, my homeland, my birthplace, he was only the God of the heaven. Why? Because God was not recognized in the land. No one saw God as anything but the creator. But the God that's involved in our in the daily world, no, he's just the God of heaven. You hear? Now that Abraham has been operating for a number of years, that's a different story. He's not just the God of heaven. What Abraham has done is he has operated as there's a God present in daily life. I will make you swear by the Lord of the God of heaven and the God of earth. You hear? Okay, so now bring us back to the Gemara. When the Gemara says, from the day that God created the world, there was no one who called God Adon. What's Adon mean? The master, until Avram comes along and says, Vayomer Adonai, my master. He already, Abraham does a shift in terms of how people approached God. Until that time, they could except the fact that there's a creator. Okay, there was something, this world is too big, and there must have been some kind of creator that created this, got this thing in motion. But now I look at the world, I see a world of nature. Okay, so I don't see necessarily that the creator kept on staying involved in this thing, in this operation, you know? Comes along Avram, and he's the first one to say to God, you're my, not just your creator, you're the master, you're my master. You're a master. And so therefore, it's what's pretty cool is, you see, in a very subtle way, in this past week's parasha, that Avram is actually expressing this idea. You have to pay attention and notice the shift that is in his messaging. But he's sitting there with Eliezer. He's setting up this whole arrangement to get his slave to go and find his son Isaac a wife, and he says, "Okay, listen, I'm making you promise. You have to promise me in the name of God. Who's God? He's the God of heaven. He's the God of earth. But you should know, by the way, that when I came out of my birthplace, that Lord, the Lord, meaning Adonai, the transcendental God, the God of heaven, is the one who took me from my father's house and my native land. Okay? And he's that God who assigns this land to your offspring, which is interesting.
That's interesting, because now he's talking about the earth.
Yeah, but it's interesting that he promised him, which is kind of interesting. I just noticed it now, right? He's saying, the God of the heavens took me out from my father's house, from the place of my birth, and who spoke to me and promised me, which is at the time of when he took him out of his father's land and his father's birthplace, that which is interesting. That he's already promising him at the time of it, I will assign this land to your offspring. That's very interesting. It's possible. There's a whole discussion between, there's a whole thing about chronology in the Torah. Like, is there a chronology? Like, the way the Torah reads, does that mean that that's how it happened historically? Or can the Torah be out of order historically? Like, for example, God speaks to Abram and says, I want you to leave your land. Lech lecha me'aretzach, I want you to go out of your land. And then later on in the Torah, it tells us that he had this discussion of promising him to have kids and that he's going to give him the land, and the kid, this whole question that we've been talking about. Which came first? Is it that he told them to leave the land and that we call it the Bris Bin Mitzrayim, that whole covenant that he made with him, that came later? Or is it possible that the covenant came earlier? Okay? So I always said, that's crazy. How can you understand? Okay, I understand. Okay, so there's a position that says the Torah is not a history book, so there's no chronology. There's, unless the Torah goes out of its way to say that this came, A came, then B came, then C came, maybe there's no chronology. And I never understood the position that said that what happened in chapter 15 came before what happened earlier. That when it said, when God said, I want you to leave, lech lecha me'aretzach me'aladcha, I want you to go out of your land, that actually came after chapter 15, where he had the covenant that he split the things and told him he's going to have kids and your kids are going to get this land. And he questions him. This whole thing that we've been discussing, where would you see any type of proof that came before what happened earlier? At least in the text.
But there can be both. There can be a chronology and then not be told in a chronological way.
Okay.
We watch movies all the time and they're flashbacks and flash forwards.
Oh, okay, good. So, but the first time that I noticed a proof in the text that would tell us this idea is this line here, 24-7. 24-7, check that out. Chapter 24, verse 7. It says that he's saying that that when he says that God said to him, Lizaracha tenet aret hazot, did he say to him at the beginning that I'm going to take you out from, let's see this, let's see if this is, let's go back here, let's go to the videotape, right? Check this out, let's see what it says here. So it says that God said, oh come on, what happened here? Come on. Okay. Why is it not going to the right place? Okay. Here it is. So it says, the Lord said to Abraham, go forth from your native land and from your father's house, the land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, right? I will make your name great and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and curse him that curses you. And all the families of the earth shall bless themselves by you. Does he say anything about his kids? Nothing, right? So that's wild. So that's, now I get it. This line is when Abraham is telling over to it, it's he's telling over to Eliezer, the God that took me out from my father's house and from my native land, who promised me an oath, saying, I will assign this land to your offspring, is basically, it could be that that's the indicator that that whole thing of chapter 15 of the bris of the covenant thing there, that that was actually earlier before Lech Lecha, which is pretty unbelievable. Okay, fine. Let's go back here. Let's go back to this Gemara. Okay, so when we see this idea, when Rav Shimon bar Yochai is telling us that Avram's the first guy to call God master, what the idea is what we're seeing in that line in 24/7, is that you see the shift, that he himself is the guy who is the one who starts bringing God into the world. That God is the one who is not just the creator, but he's an active participant in the world. So now, okay, so this idea, it's really like a novel idea to say that God is not just creator but is master, is a seismic shift in the way people approach things. That really it's Avram that's saying, and if you think about it, I mean, today we're much more, I mean, how would you say that most people believe that God is involved in daily life, or not really? Or no, there's a world that's out there and we're doing our thing. And
yeah, I think there's a combination. There are a lot of people that don't, I mean, I think also, especially in today's times, it's hard to imagine, you know, if you want to go that route, it's hard to imagine that there's a God that's active in our life, our world. If all the disastrous things are going on, if you don't understand that there's a perspective and that, you know, there's that we don't understand, but I can see where people right now don't believe there's a God in the world.
Right. So it's I mean, so even this, so this issue of a present, a God that's present in the world, so to speak, as opposed to just a creator. I mean, you could definitely make this differentiation between a creator. I can, you know, I'm good with the idea. I can accept the fact that there is a creator, but not necessarily see the next step, that there is this active God, so to speak. You know, especially because you don't necessarily see the act of God hand in what's going on. You have to work on it. You'd have to really like look for it, so to speak. Okay, so what's interesting is that Avram's the first one that kind of puts this out there, which is kind of interesting. If you go back to this again, the covenant chapter 15, and you see that they're talking to each other, and that in this issue of when he says to him, your kids, I'm giving you this this place, right? God says, I'm the Lord who brought you out from the Chaldeans to assign this land to you as a possession. God, how will I know? And then he tells him to bring the animals and to split them and etc. Okay. And then the answer, besides for the karbanot, what's the other answer that he gives him? He tells him, you'll know, well, that your offspring shall be strangers in a land not theirs, and they shall be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years. And I will execute judgment on the nation they shall serve, and in the end they shall go free with great wealth. So it's there's a process that has to go on here. So if Abraham's, we call it like the chiddush, like his new concept that he introduced to us is that there's an active God in our lives. Additionally, I would say that the land of Israel is the place where you'll experience that active hand of God more than anywhere else. It says that God's like really present there. So that means he's really involved. Like if you want to really like go to a place that might be much as much the most conducive place to experiencing God's hand involved in daily life, like really involved, this is this place. His kids got to go through this long journey of 400 years. But ultimately, it's to get back to this thing of living a life where you have a God that's active in daily life. It's not just the creator. And that's how God, listen to how he identifies himself. When God says this whole message to him, he says, I'm not the God who created the world, but rather, who am I? I am the Lord who brought you out from Ur of the Chaldeans to assign, right? I'm involved here. The same thing, when we get to the Ten Commandments, how does God identify himself? He starts out the Ten Commandments and says, I am the Lord who took you out from the land of Egypt. So this idea of this whole process is really what the Gemara is saying here, that Avram recognized when he called God my master, is that when we call God Adonai, we're saying, we're actually actively saying, you are the master who's involved in my life. Not this Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is God is the past, present, and future, creator, beyond, like transcendental, beyond this pale. He's so far removed, so to speak. What we're really doing is we're making God much more present in this world. Okay, now I made reference to this what happened in this week's parsha, in that when it says that God blessed Abraham, he blessed him bakol with everything. So this is where it gets crazy. There's a Gemara in Baba Basra that says there's a dispute between Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. What does it mean that God blessed Abraham bakol with all? So actually, there's an opinion that says Bakol is that he blessed him with a daughter. He had everything, even a daughter. The other guy says, no, he blessed him without a daughter, and that's everything, because it would be really hard for him to find the proper mate for that daughter. So God blessed him with a blessing that he didn't have to have a daughter, so he wouldn't have to find her a mate. Can you imagine this with it? And then the third opinion says, no, he had a daughter and her name was Bakol. So the Ramban says, what is going on here? This is the most bizarre dispute. What are they talking about? He had a daughter, he didn't have a daughter. Good, it would be good for him to have a daughter. He had a daughter and her name was All. What's going on? So the Ramban says, Nachmani says, it has nothing to do with whether he had a daughter or not. It's talking about actually a Kabbalistic idea. The daughter is this idea of becoming a partner, being an offset of something. That God, when he created the world, this is like, I'm going to simplify, I'm not even going to go into the Kabbalistic details, but basically, God creates a world, and now he hands off to the partner who's going to be the presence of God in the world. That's the idea of a daughter. It's like begets a daughter. But a daughter as opposed to a son is the idea of receiver as opposed to the one that's giving out. The idea of a melech, of a king, a Jewish king, is the idea of receiving and representing the nation without it, literally giving up your whole identity and being the identity of the people. King David becomes the Jewish king. The Messiah, Mashiach, will be the same idea. We'll have a representative that will become the identity of the people. Monarchy is the idea, it's not an idea of suppression, of oppression. It's actually the idea that we, as a people, will want this person, and this person will take on the identity of the Jewish people. And that the idea, now jumping to this next step, in the context of what we're talking about, is that what Avram was, and what the Jewish people will become, is God's presence in this world. That the idea that God's involved in the world is reflected by the Jewish people. That we will become like in a sense, a representation of God in this world. So in Avram's, and Avram is the one who starts this process. What the Gemara here is telling us, from the time that God created the world, there wasn't a person who called God master until Abraham came, until Avram comes and says he is called Lord, he's master. This idea that God is involved is what Avram pushes into the world and what the Jewish people are supposed to, that this is our task. One of our, it's not the only task, but this is a task of ours to take this idea of God's involvement and like making it, you know, a constant thing, that it's like it's an ongoing saga, that as this, as history unfolds, what we're supposed to be doing is bringing this concept of God as master, that he's involved in this world, making it real. And that's what's going on here. And that the idea that Abraham had a daughter that was called Bakol is not that he had a daughter that, no, that's not what they're talking about there. What they're talking about is the idea that this would become an offspring, an offshoot, a receiver that's now going to be involved in this story of what we call history of the world and the saga that continues. And it's predicated, there's another part to that Ramban where he brings down the story of the same Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who meets up with someone and he's bothered by this. There's a line in Shir HaShirim about the idea of the mother giving over the crown to her son. And he couldn't understand it. It's very esoteric, but it's basically back to the same idea of how can you have the crown? What really comes down to, I'll just say it this way, give you the punchline without working it through, but I think the punchline is the most important part here, is that many people look at God as this, as the creator that's completely separated from this world. And also the flip side is that it belittles, there's almost like a disconnect between that creator and what we are in this world. And what the Torah here is going to teach us, and what the Kabbalistic teaching is that we there's actually a very deep connection between the creator and who we are, but that the task of what it means that there's a daughter, and that the daughter is that this idea of taking this, receiving it, and then going with it, and then developing this entire world on a constant basis. It's like the idea that it's not a, God creates and let's go, but rather is constantly involved, and that we, our task also is to continue and be partners with God in developing this world. So now you have an Avram who is brings Adon, he brings master, he brings God into the world. He says he's here. But at the same time, Avram is the guy who's constantly going and doing. It's almost like you look at the beginning of how we meet Avram is this idea of him, of God saying, go, 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 go do, lech lecha. I want you to go. I want you to travel. I want you to be. I want you to. And what is the idea of, is a task for all of us, is the same idea of going and doing and being and continuously developing. And that's what happens when he says to him, listen, they're going to be 400 years, and then they're going to be on this, there's this, like, you know, they're going to be on this travel, but this is the task of the call to all of us, is the same idea. It's like constantly going and being in motion and developing. And so, but part of that, within that process, is this move that we saw here, that with Abraham, he is going from a God that he's just the God of heaven, and he's in the same sentence, we're seeing that he recognizes, or his job was to bring God down, to be the God that's not just the God of heaven, but the God of the land, God of arts. And so, you know, and then he's in the context of going to find a wife for his son, because this is this idea of the continuation of the process of this is a something that he's planting a seed to be able to go and have children, grandchildren, and to continue the development of the family and this this process, this long journey that we're still going through. Okay, so I just, you know, it's like it starts here. So just to, let's so it starts with this teaching in Brachot, this Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's message about Avram's the first guy to introduce this idea of master, God as master. But seeing within Avram's life itself the development of, he sees this idea that God is at one point just the king of the just the God of the heavens, but he brings him into being the God of the Aretz. And then going back to this idea that we see that Hashem, when he talks to Avram, and later on, I'll show you here, let's quickly look at this here, that when God talks to the Jewish people for the first time, on a large scale, right? So when he talks to us at the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai, I think it's over here. Yeah. So you see that it's pretty wild. Like the fact that God, out of all the things that he could do to identify himself as the one who took us out from Egypt. Like here, you know, that's the question he asked. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, the house of bondage. I mean, couldn't he introduce himself? I mean, it's much more impressive. I mean, I think I'm the creator of the world. You know, but the point is that the saga is about this ongoing involvement. That they say that's really like the chiddush. That's the new idea. The new idea that came through when the Jews left Egypt was this idea that's really beginning with Abraham. This idea of a progression of having a God that's very much involved. And today it's like we don't. As a society, it's removed. The push is to say. It's almost like you feel like you have to work so hard to look like, can I see God's hand involved? It's really not as apparent or you know. And when you hear people like saying it sounds kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of weird, like God, you know, God this, God that, you know. So it's clearly not the where things are, you know, in society, right? But that's what Avram is saying. I think that's, you know, his one of his major, like, if you see here, that he's saying, no, God is my master. He's very much involved, and that's kind of like the task that is at hand, you know, following that legacy that has to be developed and worked on, which I think is, you know, it's kind of interesting. I mean, at the same time. What the Ramban is saying there when it says Bakol, that message there is actually saying that the Jewish people are the ones who are bringing that presence. Like, you know, on one hand, God's involved, but if you really want to see God's hand, look at the Jewish people. Okay, so that's it's kind of an interesting. We're kind of like carrying the water. We're Mamleches Kohanim V'Gai Kadosh. We're like we're the kings. The kings become, you know, as much as the king identifies the people, in this case, we also, as kings, we're representing God in this world. And so, like this idea, when we talk about like a sanctification of God's name, or the opposite, God forbid, when we desecrate God's name, the Jewish people, by just how we act and how we do our thing, can become a sanctification of God, or the opposite, because we basically are the representatives, right? So it's kind of an interesting type of dynamic. But you see here that with Avram, when the Gemara tells us that he's the first guy to say he's our master, that's really what's happening here, is that there's this new approach. He's not just the God of heaven, he's the God of earth. But at the same time, when it says that God blessed Avram, that's also, just to go back to this, let me show you this one thing here. Let's go back very quick on the screen share. Let me show you this one that they point out. Is it says here that when it says V'Adonai, right, V'Va, and God, the and God is almost saying, like, we say, we use the vav as a chibur, like to connect something when we, in Hebrew. So the construct of this pasuk is very strange. It says, and Abraham was old, and God blessed Avram with all. Like, what? Why didn't you say, and not and, Abraham was old, God blessed Avram with all. Why is it and? Why do you have the ands in there? What's the ands? And the Lord? What do you mean, and the Lord? So whenever you see the vav, it's to connect. Like, it's connecting. Here he vayakam hasada, this is at the end of the story of him buying the burial plot for Sarah, of Marat HaMachpelah, thus the field with its cave passed from the Hittites to Abraham as a burial site, and Abraham was old, and the Lord blessed. What's with the ands, right? It's a very, like, that's not how you write. If I wrote and, I get, like, they'd cross it off. You don't start a sentence with and in English. It's bizarre. What's going on here is it's connecting. Every time you see a vav like that, you see the and, it's to connect that which is previous. And also here, when it says, and God, so they understand it is that there's a connection between that God has almost like a partner. Who's the partner? We are the partner. God is blessing Abraham with all, but he's as the Adonai, and God, and the Lord. It's to say that that Abraham's a partner, we're a partner. And that's what the Ramban, in his very difficult piece there, it's like crazy, like esoteric, very out there, but it ultimately brings back to this idea that we become the partners of God. And so it's interesting. Like if we see that there's a struggle to see God in this world, there are many places where it talks about the Shekhinah. Now the Shekhinah is God's presence. God in this world, the presence of God in this world is Knesset Yisrael, is the Jewish people. The Jewish people, like the collective Jewish people, is the presence of God in this world. So it's like, so how does that work? I mean, you're seeing that God isn't here. No, he is, but there's this extension that brings it more manifest into this world is the Jewish people. So there's like it's kind of how you work through that. But that is what's happening here. When the Gemara starts off and tells us that he's the first guy to say Adon, and that there's, yeah, he's bringing God in, and then it's almost like here's the ball, take it, and that we now, as the children of Abraham and Sarah and etc., we're carrying that torch. So it's a big deal. And then of course connects back to the land of Israel as well, because that's the place where we, if we really want to, you know, and we've experienced this, we've all had the opportunity to be there. And to be on the ground, we understand that when you're there, you're experiencing something that's different. But it's part of this, it ties into this whole messaging that God is telling you.
Do you feel different when you're there?
100%.
Really?
Yeah.
Like even upon landing, like literally like...
Not right that, but when I'm in Jerusalem, for sure, and even all over, it's like there's something there. If you let yourself, there's something, the energy is different.
Really?
Yeah.
I absolutely agree. Even when I was younger, when I stepped off the plane, literally, as I said, you know, in the old days, you didn't go through the jetway. You had to come off the, walk off the plane and walk across the tarmac.
Yeah.
I literally felt something at the first time I came off that plane as a child. And it took a little bit longer to feel it when I went as an adult. But as we were walking through Tzfat, I literally felt ancestors. I don't know how else to explain it.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I was just having a discussion with my 25-year-old daughter during Shabbos about God and about religion and all stuff. And even she was saying that when she was in Israel, she at the wall, she definitely felt something. Like, she definitely felt something. And so she knows God. There's a God. The question is, you know, we're just working through some of the finer points of how that connects to Judaism and things.
But right. So this is...
For me, it's no doubt, you know, and I've traveled in a lot of different countries across the world, and Israel was the first time I went there on this trip that we went on together, and it was just a totally totally different feeling from anywhere else in the world. And the spiritual feeling that you feel, especially at the wall.
There you go.
Yeah.
But so you take that and now you bring it the next step, and that is that there's messaging, like there's something, there's more, that there, we have a major responsibility. Like, it's, you know, this world, everything's nuts, you know, like, we're living in a strange time. It's probably strange. I mean, probably 20 years ago, they were saying the same thing, that this is a strange time, right? But the question that needs to be, you know, thought over is like, it's okay, as based on this concept of what we just saw here in the teaching, is like, so okay, so now how do we take that and apply it to this world? And I think that part of it is as individuals to be able to, like, you know, to realize, I think the major thing is that in a very subtle way, the world we live in is very much not appreciating the idea of constantly having to grow. That the world is kind of like, I want to work, retire, and sit at a beach. That's kind of like, that's the ultimate. And the answer is no. But what God was telling Avram, and it's our message also, is that you are never going to that. You can relax at a beach and enjoy and re-energize yourself, but that's not the goal. The goal is to constantly be growing and becoming more and learning more and becoming a better person. All these constantly improving, and that's the, and like, to be able to first live your life and become, you know, connected to that idea, and then at this, and recognize the fact that we are part of a group of people as a nation that believes in that idea, and then to then convey that to the world, that that's really what the ultimate is that it's about becoming more. Like, what are you satisfied? You're satisfied with like mediocrity? No, it's about becoming more. And that's like the idea of the dynamic aspect of God that we are supposed to emulate, is like, that is to constantly becoming more. And realize that the, you know, again, to see the hand of God and all these things, but this, and then to like bring that out to be a light onto the nations, is to bring this out there, that this is not about, I mean, look, I love shopping more than, you know, it's like, but that's not what life is. That's, it's nice to like, but no, that's not what life is. Life is about becoming more and to constantly try to become more. And to struggle with that. It's not a simple thing. It's a struggle. But, and then take that and put it in a bottle and convey it outward, is that I think brings the goodness to the world. And that's what Hashem is asking Avram, and Avram is giving us over as a legacy, and what the rabbis are teaching us, because they're looking at these things and they're seeing, you see that? You see how he changed in mid messaging? He was God of heaven and earth, and then he's just the God of heaven when he took, it's like that subtlety, but that from there it's like everything, that he recognized God as master. He's involved. He's here, he's present. So I think next week we'll try to do like Hanukkah stuff, okay? That'll be the goal, we'll see. And then eventually we'll get back to the idea of Karbanot also. Like, we have to maybe we'll do like a field trip to like the slaughterhouse. I'm telling you, yeah. You see it, and then it's like, oh, I can kind of get the Karbanos thing.
Oh my God.
It was like, oh my gosh, total different experience. Let me say that other way. But at least you get it. New appreciation for what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so either you become a vegetarian and vegan, or you say, okay, I get this whole thing.
I need a good steak right now, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, John.
No problem. All right.
Thank you.
Have a good
day.
Good week, guys.
See you guys.
Have a good one. Bye.
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 Take care.
Thanks. Bye.